And joining us right now on PMP Network is a musical legend. You may remember songs like Eye in the Sky and Time and Don't Answer Me. Our guest is Alan Parsons, who's been nominated for probably like 10 Grammy Awards and is one of the most acclaimed people in music. And he joins us right now. How are you, Alan?
Great, thanks, Mark. How are you?
Excellent, thanks. And
I think the last count of Grammys was actually 11, but...
11, okay. Well, see...
I think I hold the record for having the most nominations without winning.
Well, you're like the Susan Lucci, huh?
Oh, really?
Yeah, Susan Lucci had like 20 nominations for Emmys.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but she finally did win, though.
Well, the highest number of nominations in the production and engineering category, then.
Yeah. Well, you've been doing this for a long time.
Oh, don't remind me.
Tell us, I really want to know about this one, because you began your career as an assistant engineer at Abbey Road Studios and worked on things like Abbey Road and Let It Be with the Beatles. What was that like back then? And even Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Well, I was, in the Beatles period, I was in training. You know, I was an assistant, and therefore not really, I can't claim to have any significant critique of the album, but by the time the Floyd came along, yes, I was trained up and fully fledged engineer by then. So that was, but you know, Beatles and Pink Floyd doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're gonna be a trainee in music as an engineer, what better than the Beatles, like the best great band that ever lived?
I lost you for a moment there. I don't know why, because I'm on a landline, but could you repeat that?
Yeah, I said that if you're going to train as an assistant engineer, what better way to do it than, like, the best band of all time, the Beatles?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing experience, and I still sort of revel in it, the fact that there I was not only working with the best pop band of all time, but also being paid for it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, working on things like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, one of the best albums ever, you have worked on so many of these type of things. And the industry, you know, I've been in radio now for 40 years. And when I first started, I remember the razor blade and the reel-to-reel decks. And,
right.
And nowadays, everything's on chips and things. How has this thing changed for you in terms of the way that things have gone? Everything's different now with the internet and everything.
Oh, it's very different. Yeah, I mean, there's not a tape machine in sight in any studios I've been in the last few years. There are inherent advantages in recording to hard disks, but you know, the problem is that with unlimited tracks, it's very tempting to not make decisions. And you know, my training taught me to be decisive, because you had to sometimes. You know, especially in the early days of my career, when we were working on 8 tracks, you had to balance things up and make decisions on performances. You know, but otherwise, you know, it was a very painstaking process to go backwards and work. You know, work it. You know, the whole thing again to get to where you were. But these days, unlimited tracks. You know, you can shift timing. You can auto tune. You can do all kinds of stuff. So it's really very different. But the thing I miss the most is in the way that most people record these days is just working as an ensemble. You know, working as a band. So many people just do one part at a time.
Yeah.
And
they all blended together.
I think that gets in the way of the feel of things.
Yeah. You know, we talk about, you know, I'm talking about radio, and years ago when all these albums came out, the DJs like myself were really important. Nowadays, the Internet's taken over. What kind of involvement have you had in terms of promotion through the web for your stuff?
Well, I mean, ever since I've taken on my most recent PR firm, I seem to be getting a lot of Internet based interviews. I mean, I know your station goes out to a lot of web destinations. I think, you know, that's the way it is now. I mean, I don't want to say radio is dead, but you know, the indications are that it's going that way. Just like physical products, you know, like CDs and DVDs probably won't be with us very much longer.
Now, I understand that you have a website as well. Are you doing things on there, experimental stuff? Do you put some of your music up?
I'm somewhat guilty of not really keeping up with the internet. I have a Facebook page which is run by other people. I very rarely go there. The only sort of active website is my own sort of fan website, which is alanparsonsmusic.com. And I have another website for a DVD series that I did quite recently, which is called The Art and Science of Sound Recording, and that has its own website as well.
Now,
did you know about that? Did you know about the DVD series?
I did not.
Basically, for 2 years, I devoted my entire life to creating this educational documentary series all about sound recording. And it's out there. It's available on 3 DVDs and also for download. And once again, if I could plug it, it's called The Art and Science of Sound Recording, or Alan Parsons, The Art and Science of Sound Recording, to be exact. But it's a very comprehensive series. It appeals to anybody who has the slightest interest in how records are made, and especially musicians and budding engineers. You know, a lot of stuff in there for them.
Sure. Now, you're involved in other people's music as well. I mean, because you're a producer. Who are some of the people that you've been working with lately?
Well, the one I'm very proud of is Jake Shimabukuro. He's the ukulele virtuoso that's had 10 million hits on the internet playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do, actually, yeah. Grand Ukulele is the name of his CD.
That's right, yeah. And that's out this week. And we saw him play live at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California, just a week ago, and he was great. And he's on tour. So, I mean, he fills theaters everywhere he goes with one man and his ukulele. He's just amazing.
So is that the first time you've done?
Are you kidding? Am I going to spend an evening with an ukulele? Yeah,
well, I was going to say that's probably the first time you combined with a ukulele guy.
I'm sorry.
That's probably the first combination you've ever done with a ukulele person, right?
Yes.
Not exactly.
I've never recorded ukulele until I met Jake.
And now you're going to become a ukulele virtuoso yourself, right?
Well, I'm working on it. I haven't actually got one yet. I'm waiting for him to pick out one for me to buy. Because you can buy duds. I'm sure there's good and bad ukuleles.
I'd like to go back in time a little bit with you, to the time when you had the Alan Parsons Project and songs like "Eye in the Sky" were huge. What was it like at that point touring with all the hits that you guys had? I would assume life was a little bit different when you're on the charts.
Well, yeah, we didn't we didn't tour in the conventional sense. We just did promotional tours because we didn't have a band. The Alan Parsons Project per se never toured.
Really, I never toured.
So, we would go and do, major markets, radio tours, and that's how we got the word out. In hindsight, if we had had a live band, I think we'd have sold twice as many records.
I mean,
I didn't start touring until I was actually a solo artist in about 94, 95.
Songs like "Eye in the Sky" are still played all the time on oldies radio stations. So
yes, it's true.
Did you own these songs? Do you still own them?
I'm sorry.
Did you own this music?
No. The label and publishers own everything.
Oh.
That's not to say we don't get paid, but we get paid royalties.
So you didn't write any of these songs?
Oh yes, of course.
But you don't have the publishing.
Most people. They're writing copyright to a publisher.
Yeah, years ago that no one knew, right?
Years ago no one knew, you say?
Yeah, I mean, years ago no one knew what the kind of value would be years later.
Well, yes, that's true. I think people have learned from the mistakes of others in the past, and they're more protective. And a lot of artists, I mean, Jake Shimabukuro included, is put out his CD on his own label and found a distribution company to put it out. But he didn't have to sell his product to anybody, although he might do so if he gets the right deal.
Yeah. Are you advising him?
I'm I'm certainly looking to see if any major label would take it on, and if it's worthwhile to him, he'll do it, I'm sure.
And now, what about
that means bigger exposure, and then everybody's happy.
What about Porcupine Tree? Weren't you involved with their new stuff?
Yes, I just did. I just did an album with Stephen Wilson, who's the front man of Porcupine Tree, and that went very well. We did that in a studio in Hollywood. He's got his own band now, so he's touring and recording as Stephen Wilson, not just as Porcupine Tree these days.
Well, for folks who don't know, Porcupine Tree was a huge act in England. They're not really that big in this country yet.
They still are huge in England, and they're number two on the DVD charts in Germany.
Wow! So they're big in Europe.
Yeah, very big, and South America. We were in Chile, and I was telling radio people in Chile that I was working with Stephen. They said, "Oh, wow! He's huge here."
Now you still tour in Europe and South America yourself, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And the
appeal seems to be greater outside the U.S. for some reason. I don't know why.
So you play all the Alan Parsons Project stuff?
Yes, we would say nothing else. I mean, it's all Project stuff. that's what they want to hear. I've put out, as you may know, I've put out three solo albums since the demise of the Project, but didn't set the world alight, and nobody wants to hear those songs. They just want to hear the Alan Parsons Project songs.
Well, it's people like to hear familiar music.
That's right.
So, do you play any Beatles stuff or
familiar music? I went to see Peter Gabriel at the Santa Barbara Bowl last night. My gosh, what a show! Incredible show.
Yeah.
And it was all old stuff. Everyone. The whole So album and Biko and Salisbury Hill. All the great
sure.
hits of the past.
Did you go up stage and say hi?
I didn't. I know that Peter doesn't receive guests after show, so we didn't get there until, an hour before show time, so it was a bit late. So we know each other. We've met.
I figured you did. Everybody knows Alan Parsons.
I wouldn't say that. A lot of people in the business I have not met. Eric Clapton is a notable missing party from the people I've met.
So you haven't met Eric yet?
No, never met him.
Hi, Eric, come over here. Come here, Eric. Come here. Say hello. Hello.
Hello.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Alan. And for folks out there who want to know what's going on with Alan Parsons, just go to alanparsonsmusic.com. And he is going to be doing some promotion for his own stuff. And also take a look for Jake's CD, Grand Ukulele, as well. Did you write a song for that CD?
No, I sort of helped him along the way in a couple of instances. But I actually thought that I was going to get credited as a writer on one of the tracks, but it turned out which Jake thought was a traditional folk song, but it turned out that it did have a composer and was still in copyright. So.
You're talking about Island Fever Blues?
It was called A Cuckoo Falls.
Oh, okay.
It's the last track of the album, and I actually wrote a string arrangement for it.
Oh, so, but you don't get credit for that.
I get credit for that.
Yeah, okay.
I get an arrangement credit, but not a publishing credit.
I got it. Well, Alan, it was a pleasure talking to you and meeting you, and I hope to speak to you again sometime.
All right. Well, likewise. Thank you very much.
Take care.
See you.